Hi, everybody. My name is Johanna. I'm a very grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon and Alateen. I was actually in an assembly today with people from, let's see, Israel and Italy and the UK and South America and, all over the place. I love it. I love our fellowship. Really do. I want to carry more of the message than the mess, but I do want to qualify a little bit. And that is, let me start by saying that I figured I had a normal childhood. I grew up mostly in base housing, family housing. And so everybody's dad was in the army. Everybody moved at least every 3 years. Nobody had any grandparents, aunts, uncles, or cousins. We had each other, but not for very long because we all moved at least every 3 years. There was actually 1 year we moved three times. The things that I do know were a little different is that my brothers and sister had a different father. He was no longer living. He had died in an accident. And my dad had adopted those kids, but still they were treated a little bit differently. And I was always a little different. I was the one who was supposed to be perfect. Despite the fact that I was youngest, I was supposed to know everything everybody else knew. At least that was the feeling I got. And there are real downsides to that. The upside of it was that I was a very high achiever, at least in the things I was good at. I did school well, so that was good. I didn't do sports well, so I didn't even try. You know, there was no nobody to encourage me to do things just for fun. I mean, you only did them if you did them well. Ended up in high school. My dad had retired from the military, and we were in a tiny little town where everybody knew each other from kindergarten, and I was different. I spoke differently. I was had a different everything in many ways, and I was generally quite lonely. Spent about a year of smoking marijuana every weekend at the very least. And I ended up going to a school, a college, where the dean would, bail you out if you had problems with drugs. They're really fine with this. Only what I found out is that I was now, for the first time in my life, among a lot of people who were smarter than I was, and I had to study in order to keep up my normal achievement. And I couldn't do that with I was stoned, and I quit. And I met this guy who didn't do drugs or alcohol. And I found out that I liked sex a whole lot more than I liked the other thing. So, it was very funny to go to the school that was known for drugs. And I dropped it completely. He needed me. Oh, and I needed to be needed. Oh, I want to tell you about my high school years, the 3 years that my siblings were all gone and I was the only one at home. I did what I thought was normal to do. Every night I put my mom to bed. I took her bottle of wine and put it in the refrigerator and helped to get her settled into bed. And I thought that was a normal thing to do. I thought it was normal to have a mom who is easily upset and who went to pills in the daytime or to alcohol in the evening when she was upset. And because anything that was sort of out of the ordinary upset her, I thought that there must be something bad inside of me. I really had this idea, this image that there was a monster inside of me. That kind of round garden wall, and inside of that was the monster. And the outside was okay, but the inside, nowhere, let's not look at that at all. So I ended up marrying that guy who needed me, and I spent years twisting myself into a pretzel to try and keep him from losing his temper, which was not something he was able to do anyway. And every once in a while, we would do some counseling, and it just didn't seem to make any difference because he didn't think he could change, and I had changed about as much as I possibly could. But we kind of stuck with it because, I don't know, I'm stubborn for whatever it is. Then there came a day when I went to a conference that was supposed to teach me how to help the adult children of alcoholics. And this woman said, oh, the adult children of alcoholics learn, don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. And I said, oh my God, this woman is talking about me. I am that person. And I slapped my Pollyanna mask on ever tighter, and I got myself through the next hour or so of work I had to do. And then I went to go pick up my daughter from preschool, and I couldn't hold it together any longer. I pulled into a parking lot, and in the locked car, I cried for the next 45 minutes. And I cried for that little girl who was hurting. And after about 45 minutes in this locked car, I felt arms around me. And I got this sense, not in exact words, but this sense that everything was going to be okay. In some deep fundamental way, I was going to be okay. Things were going to be okay. This woman, in giving her talk, had talked about Al-Anon as one of the options for the adult children of alcoholics. And within a week, I was at my first Al-Anon meeting. I first went to Al-Anon adult children, and they named my pain. I did find, however, that I, in that particular meeting, which is no longer there, and there's a reason, is that I kept hearing the same stories without any improvement. Nobody was getting better. They were just telling the same old stories. And I, at that time, a gig I had been doing on Thursday mornings quit, and I had my choice between a smoking meeting in Concord or a non-smoking meeting in Alamo. Alamo is about 20 minutes away from my home and where I work, and therefore was also a little bit more comfortable, not running into people from work. And I went down there and I lucked into it. That was a really strong Al-Anon meeting. Now, I will tell you, at the time I went to that meeting, every one of the members there was the wife of an alcoholic. And I was not the wife of an alcoholic. But every time we read the traditions, and it says on tradition 3, the only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or a friend. So I knew I belonged. I qualified, and I kept going. And after a while, one of the members coming to me and saying, I like it when you share because I can understand my daughter better. And eventually we got many other different relations to the alcoholic. Other children came, and then we ended up with parents of alcoholics and grandparents and friends and, you know, all kinds of things. We recognized many, many different ways. Men started joining us. Being a Thursday morning meeting, we weren't that strong on men, still aren't, but we don't exclude them by any means. And it's great to have all the different relationships. But the thing that really, really helped me is that this Thursday morning meeting focuses on the solutions. We share our experience to some extent, our strength and our hope to a great deal more. You know, we talk about taking the mess to your sponsor and the message to the group. We regularly read and share on steps, traditions, and now the concepts as well. We use conference-approved literature, and we read from it. We work the program in really important ways. I have a couple of other stories of my experiences with a higher power. One of them, I had probably been in program for a couple of years. And it was a hot Sunday, and I was getting ready for church. And my daughter got herself ready, and not wearing a dress like I usually had her wear, she put on pants. And she said, Mom,
God doesn't care what I wear. And it got me thinking that who was I dressing for? I was not dressing for God. I was dressing for the people at church, you know? And I went to church, and we don't normally have very much quiet prayer time, but we did that day. And I go, and I'm going, God, what is it you want of me? What do you want me to do? And I got a three-word answer. I love you. That's all the words. The subcontext that I got clearly was that I didn't need to do anything to earn that love. I had spent my entire life being a human doing. And Al-Anon and now my higher power were encouraging me to be a human being. That was sufficient, that I did not need to do. I didn't need to earn. Another direct contact, and I have only a few of these. I was trying to make myself do a fourth step. At that time, all we had was the Blueprint for Progress, and I tried to answer the questions, and I was trying to do it, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. But I was trying to meditate, and someone had suggested that, you know, you can't think about nothing. So I sort of held the image of a rose in my mind. And the image was actually that of a rose bud. And I'm thinking about this bud, and I'm thinking about the fact that I really need to be looking at myself, but somehow I can't seem to make myself look at myself. What's going on? And in my meditation, the rose starts to open. And it opened and opened and opened. And inside of the rose was just more rose. There was no monster inside of it. There was no rod at the center of the rose. It was just all rose. And the message I got, and my mind was not capable of doing this, I am sure this was from my higher power, was the message that I did not need to be afraid to look inside of myself, because all I was going to find was more Johanna. And after that, I felt compelled to write a life story method of doing a fourth step. I just had to write. I had to get it out. I stole time away from work and from other things I felt compelled to do that writing. I was no longer afraid to look inside, because it was just more me. Lots of times I have gotten indirect messages, if you will. A lot of time people in Al-Anon say something and I'm going, oh yeah, that's for me. That is who I am. That is meant for me. And sometimes it's music. One of the ones that struck me most was I was driving to a meeting and I hear this phrase, thunder only happens when it's raining. And I realized that my husband is somebody who has never learned how to cry. He yells when he's hurt. And that thunder happens when it's raining. And that gave me a tremendous amount of compassion for him. I'm not sure I'm still great even now at tolerating it all, but yes, it happens, and that helps me. I've learned a lot. One of the reasons I wanted Diana to talk today and to be here for sure is she's been an important part of a couple of important points in my journey. One of them I remember really well, and it's hard for me to realize she said today, she joined the program 5 years after I did. But I remember at one point when I was sobbing with the idea of loving myself, and Diana held me and told me that we in Al-Anon will love you until you can love yourself. And that is true, and that has happened. The love of the program, the love of the people in the program, has helped me learn to love myself. The other thing is, and I've told these other stories before, particularly that day my denial broke, and I had an incident happen where my son was very ill, very suddenly. And I had to go to upstate New York on a red eye flight. Now, I used to be a fearful flyer. You know, one of those where if I'm holding up the armrest to help get the plane off the air, right? You know, I'm afraid of crashing, you know. And Diana reminded me of that promise I had had from a higher power, that in some deep fundamental way, things were going to be okay. So I'm on this red eye flight, and I'm thinking, you know, if the plane crashes, I am still going to be in my higher power's hands. Even if I die, I'm going to be in my higher power's hands. If I get there, I'm going to be in my higher power's hands. My son is going to be in our higher power's hands, his higher power's hands. Is going to be okay in some deep fundamental way. And indeed, the plane got there, and I got to the hospital, and what my son said was, oh, thank God, it's my mother. And I was there with him for a week or more, and I went to Al-Anon meetings, and I went to Al-Anon meetings. I, you know, couldn't be 24/7 in the hospital with him, which is probably a good thing, and I went to Al-Anon meetings. And what I find is that Al-Anon meetings in other places are often a little bit different, but they're all the same. We have the same steps. We have the same traditions. We may have some differences in how we run meetings, but we share the same language of love. And that was important to me. When I travel, and you know, COVID stopped this, but I used to travel across country a lot. And, you know, rather than go to see the tourist attractions, I tend to go to Al-Anon meetings. You know, that's how I travel the country and get to know the country, is to go to Al-Anon meetings where I go. And I found out that if you just Google Al-Anon in city name, you know, you can pretty much find an Al-Anon meeting that's going to work for you. I like that our group, which just to be used to call, actually when I first got there, it was called the Thursday Alamo Non-Smoking Al-Anon Family Group. Wasn't quite as much of a tongue twister as Thursday Alamo Al-Anon Family Group. And last year, there was a move to add a tagline, and we added the tagline, staying in the solutions. We stay in the solution. And that's what I like about our meeting. We use the tools. We use the legacies, the steps, the traditions, the concepts. We use conference-approved literature. We use sponsorship. We do service. Service was a really important thing for me. The first piece of service I did was to be the secretary at the meeting. And what I loved about that, and somebody I pushed to be secretary now told me the same thing just this past week. I read the opening and I read the closing, and those beautiful words just sank into me. And also being the secretary made me feel really a part of the group. And that was remarkable. And I went on, and I've done a lot of service, and I did pretty much everything in the group, and I was the group rep and a couple of times. I've been the district rep, and I've served at the area level. And whether I'm serving at those levels or I am just in the group, service is important. Sponsorship is an important aspect of service. My parents died over the years. My dad died, I guess, I didn't know exactly, 16 years ago. And then my mom died about 12 years ago. And then came 2020. Oh my God. January of 2020, the brother who's just older than I am, 3 years older, he fell at home and he broke his skull. And 3 days later, he died. And then October, the next older sibling was hospitalized. He came out and he did a family conference call. And he says, I have hepatitis C and end-stage cirrhosis of the liver, and I'm dying. And within 3 weeks, he was dead. And then less than a month after that, I got a phone call from my brother-in-law that my sister had suddenly died. All three of my siblings died in 2020. And then in January, my first boyfriend died. And, you know, there was the issue that my sister's ashes were going to be scattered, and it was a huge surge of COVID, and I didn't feel safe going. And for all these things, I was in grief. I was hurting. And I shared in Al-Anon meetings that I was hurting, that I was in grief. I was crying nearly every day, but it wasn't depression. It was grief. And sharing feelings, sharing bad feelings, helps to lessen them. It, you know, cuts them in half. Sharing joy doubles them, and sharing sorrows halves them. And after a while, I got over it. You know, not that I don't sometimes feel sad, particularly when I say, oh my God, they all three of them died. Now, so I have no alcoholics in my life. We have a family illness from the other half of my family with bipolar disease, which both of my children have. Neither of them drink. My husband doesn't drink. I have no alcoholics living in my life. Why do I keep coming to Al-Anon? Because they're living in my head. They're still there. Every time I don't go to meetings, they come back and say, oh, no, you're not doing enough. What are you doing to earn your way? You're not good enough. You should be better at this. All those messages from my childhood are ready to spring at any moment's notice if I don't keep coming back to meetings. And so I have to keep coming back to meetings, and I have to keep working the program. I have to acknowledge that I'm powerless over alcohol and alcoholics and bipolar disease and just about everything else. And when I try to be in control, my life becomes unmanageable. I came to believe, oh my God, I had to fire the God of my childhood. First off, I have to also tell you that I took years at every step. You know, I'm not a fast learner at this kind of stuff. This was hard, deep emotional learning, and it was not quick and easy. I thought I'd come to Al-Anon for 6 months, learn everything and go. Well, that was a long, long time ago. I came to believe in a power that would really care about me. Not only that could, but would care to restore me to sanity. I had to make a decision, and I still make a decision every day, to turn my will and my life over to that power, to try to be, as I think I got this phrase from Diana, the woman that God intends me to be. I had to look at myself thoroughly. I had to share that with somebody else. I had to become humble and ask God to remove these defects. And I had to make amends to people. I made amends to my father on the last trip I did before he had a stroke and was really not able to receive my amends. That was a that was a God shot. It may have been that trip or one before that, that one of the fun things I did, my daughter calls it playing bingo or making bingo cards. And that is to expect people to be exactly who they always are. I had always gone home to my mom and dad, hoping that they would be Leave It to Beaver family and they would care about my spiritual development and who I was as a human being. And the fact of the matter is they're all about money, property, and prestige. You know, my parents were both very functional alcoholics. They kept their jobs. Like I said, my mom passed out every night in front of the television. She fell asleep. And, dad toddled off to bed right after dinner to pass out. But they worked during the day and everything was fine. But they would always pull me into their arguments, ask me to be their judge between the two of them, who was right. My mother got so maudlin. It was just, and when I finally went back and said, oh, this is what they're going to do. Mom's maudlin. Yep. They're trying to pull me into their argument. Yep. Bingo. Bingo. Oh, I got a blackout. Bingo. They did everything I expected them to. That was important. That was a way off topic because from making amends to my dad. And continuing on a regular basis to take personal inventory, to work on prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with my higher power. I like to put my HP on my shoulder. I kind of like a pirate's parrot, HP is here. And when I have a tough thing, I will often just sort of pat my shoulder to remind me that HP is there. I don't think HP is literally there, but in and above and around. But that's just a reminder that my HP is with me at all times. And I did have a spiritual awakening as a result of those steps and try to carry the message to the others. And I'm not going to go over all the traditions or even the concepts, but I love the warranties. And I think I have enough time that I can talk a little bit about the warranties. So many people don't even look at the warranties. And Owen and I had this discussion last month that, we tend to read the 12th concept saying, traditions. The spiritual foundation for Al-Anon's world services is contained in the general warranties of the conference, Article 12 of the Charter. Well, if you don't read the warranties, you haven't read Concept 12. The warranties go on. In all proceedings, the World Service Conference of Al-Anon shall observe the spirit of the traditions, that only sufficient operating funds, including an ample reserve, be its prudent financial principle. You notice it doesn't say prudent reserve, it says ample reserve. That allowed me not to work myself to death. I was in a position where I could certainly work more and earn more money, or I could take more time for Al-Anon and for myself. And I chose to do that. It also allowed me to retire at age 62 rather than waiting. And because I had sufficient operating funds, including an ample reserve. And that's my family's prudent financial principle. That no conference, or in this case, family member, shall be placed in unqualified authority over other members. The example I like to use on that is I could tell my kids, you will unload the dishwasher. I couldn't say, and you will like it. Couldn't do that. And even though I am as a parent of minor child, I definitely had authority. It was not unqualified. There's this thing called Child Protective Services. There's not unqualified authority. That all decisions be reached by discussion, vote, and whenever possible by unanimity. Certainly, that's how we like to work in our Al-Anon meeting, but I like to do that in my family as well. It's a little harder when there are only two of us trying to figure out, you know, where what 50-50, it's hard to get to a unanimous, you know, but if we discuss it and we talk about why we want the various ways, maybe, and we can look to see, I give some, you give some, we meet somewhere in the middle, we talk together, you know, hopefully that'll happen. That no conference action ever be personally punitive or an incitement to public controversy. Now, I have to be a little bit careful that this is not, don't air the family's dirty linen in public, you know, but it's that it's not a matter of punishing somebody else. I'm going to tell on you because, you know, that's not good program. And though the conference serves Al-Anon, it shall never perform any act of government. And that like the fellowship of Al-Anon family groups, which it serves, it shall always remain democratic in thought and action. I really like that about our program, that no person is more important than any other person. My family was all about ladders. We were all about who's above and who's below. Where do you fit in this, on this ladder? And what I found in Al-Anon is that we get to lay that ladder on its side. We get to form a circle and we get to all be equal. We leave our professions and our socioeconomic status and, you know, everything else is outside. And who we are in the meeting is Al-Anon members. And we all, each of us, has experience and strength and hope. And we share that with each other. And on those days when one of us doesn't have any hope whatsoever, somebody else does. And so this sharing that we do together allows all of us to grow. I don't know where I would be without Al-Anon. I probably would have lost my mind at some point because there was a limit to how much of that twisting myself into a pretzel that I could do. I have relationships, not really close ones, but I have relationships with my kids, and they are not based on my giving advice. My daughter-in-law says she likes to talk to me because I don't tell her what she ought to do. I'm actually closest to my daughter-in-law of all the kids there. I am one among equals, and that's really important to me. I leave everything else outside the room in the virtual room. Speaking of which, I do want to talk a little bit about Zoom. Diana mentioned it, I will too. Zoom, I love Zoom. Yes, I miss the hugs. I definitely miss the hugs. But I'm able to go to many more Al-Anon meetings than I was before Zoom. I am able to get to meetings in other parts of the country. I'm regularly going to a meeting in Malibu. And, you know, I joined a meeting the other day of seniors in Al-Anon. And I think they said they started in Arizona, but there were people there from all over the country, which was, you know, great. I went to this international thing today. You know, I absolutely love that about Zoom, that I'm not limited. I meet together with some other people who cannot drive, can't get to things. And a lot of people can't or won't drive at night. And the ability to get to a meeting without having to get into a car and drive someplace is really a cool thing for me. And yes, I miss the hugs, and I'll be willing to and happy to get them again. But I'm loving Zoom. Of course, I'm probably speaking to the choir here because you are hollier because you're willing to be on Zoom. But it's a good thing. For me, it's been a really good thing. I think I have shared everything that I really intended to share. And so I thank you all for your attention.